Welcome to Rare Bird Radio, where we're all dads all the time. I am Dan Dante, and today I have on my show Max Long. Good afternoon, Max.
Hey, how's it going, man? Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. It's good to have you here. So, everybody, Max Long is a career officer in the Navy, and he is also a blogger who owns the blog Military Dad Blog. So we're going to talk about a whole bunch of different issues today. I want to frame the conversation first, Max. I want you to understand where I'm coming from. Because I basically hate all bloggers. Okay?
Right.
I hate 95% of bloggers. I hate 99% of dad bloggers. And I'll tell you why. Because I'm cool with the arrogance and kind of the self-aggrandizement of bloggers who think that what they're saying is gospel and everybody should listen to them. I'm cool with that because I've met a lot of bloggers and none of them are as arrogant as I am. So I'm cool with that. My real problem, though, is that the context of their book, they talk about how spectacular life is, and they talk about how great their kids are, and how their poop should be, you know, emblazoned in gold, and their wives are the best cooks since Julia Child, and there's just no reality that I see coming through blogs almost ever. And that's one of the reasons why I really like reading your blog, is because you're real, and you talk about issues and what goes on in your life and the bad as well as the good. And so I want to kind of get a sense of why you started a blog and what your point of view is and what you wanted to accomplish by throwing all your stuff kind of out there into the blogosphere.
Yeah, sure. And I really started blogging. I was at work. I was on shore duty, which for those that aren't familiar with the Navy, basically means I had a couple years off from being on a ship. And my office really, really wanted to create a blog. And I was the youngest one in the office, so they just assumed I knew how to do it. So they came up to me and said, "Hey, Max, we'd really like you to create a blog." And I turned to them and I was like, "What the hell is a blog?" And that's how it was. And they said, "Well, you're the youngest dad, so you probably know how to do this. Go ahead and make that happen." So, roger that.
And by the way, what the hell is a blog? That's a question I ask all the time today. But
yeah, I've been doing it for 3 years now. I still don't know, right? But I created the blog, and I've always enjoyed writing. It's something once this Navy ride is over, something I'd like to do on a regular basis. And so I really kind of got hooked on it, and I created my own blog, and it kind of took off from there. And I guess I started about 3 years ago now, and it's a little slow of late because my shore duty is over. I'm back on a ship working long days, getting underway every once in a while.
When I start talking, you shut up, sir. Okay, so when you went from doing whatever the blog was in the Navy, and I can't even imagine what the Navy blog is. I mean, I saw Good Morning Vietnam, so I know what you know. Which you cover right. People do with the news, right? But when you decided that I'm going to have my own blog, why? Why did you think that your story was compelling or unique or why anybody in God's green earth would want to hear about what happens with you and your kids?
Well, I guess I wanted to write about something that I enjoy, something I'm passionate about. And as I was thinking about it, I love sports, but, not enough to necessarily write about it all the time. The two things that I love the most are my career and then my family. So I decided to kind of combine that into one blog. The material keeps coming because the kids always do something crazy, so I can write about that. And then the Navy always does something crazy, so I can write about that. So there's always material to write about. It's a lot of fun, and, it's first-hand experience that I get to write about all the time. And it's kind of got a hook on it, too, because people know that there's military moms and dads out there that have to say goodbye to their kids for extended periods of time, and they know they're out there, but they don't necessarily know how they're able to do what the things they do and why they do the things they do. And I think it's kind of helped get that story out there a little bit and hopefully educate some folks, as well as just, talk about my family a little desperately.
Right. And I've read your blog, and desperation is the word that comes to mind. But I'm kidding. I love your blog. I've loved it for a long time. But, what I said at the top of the show was that, there is a sense of, most bloggers write about how great things are, because I think when people are sharing their story with the world, they just have a tendency to want to, embellish a little bit, make them seem like their lives are a little better than they possibly are. You don't do that. You write as much about the the trials and tribulations as you do about the big successes. And is it easier for you to do that? I mean, did you make a conscious choice that I want to talk about the foibles as well as everything else, or did it just kind of happen that way?
Well, I just, you know, as an officer, you know, I do a lot of leadership type things. I always believe that the first rule of being a leader is you have to be yourself. Because the moment you try doing something else, everybody else knows you're fake. And they know you're pretending to be something you're not. So, you know, you have to be real. You have to be yourself. And that's what I was trying to do on my blog as well. I didn't want to create this huge fake persona that talks about how awesome, you know, I am as a father. Because, honestly, I fail all the time as a father. And how awesome my kids are, which they are pretty good, but, you know, all kids have their moments, both good and bad. So I want to be more real. I want to talk about the hard parts of what I do because, you know, coming home from a deployment and that the picture everybody sees of the sailor, the Marine on the pier, giving their, you know, kids a hug for the first time ever, those are awesome pictures. And, they, you know, they brighten everybody's day and they're awesome. But nobody really sees all the pictures from the first part of that deployment where everybody left, and you've got the families looking at that ship leaving the pier and sailing off. And so I try to write about that stuff as well, just to kind of give everybody a perspective on how hard it is. It really is hard to be a military parent. And, you know, there's both mothers and fathers in the Navy and the Marines and all the military. And it's really hard, and I want everybody to kind of realize that as well.
Well, actually, that's a good point. Let's talk about that, because your blog is definitely from the point of view of a military man or woman. Well, I don't know. For you, it could be a woman. I mean, I never knew. You know, from a person in the military. And so why don't you give the people a little background of your career, because you've been in the military for a long, long time, and kind of your progression through the ranks, and then we'll tie it back around to how that works with your family.
Yeah, sure. So I've been in the Navy for about 16 years now. I went to boot camp back in 1998. And I was enlisted for about a few years, three and a half years. And I picked up an officer scholarship, went to the University of Kansas, got a degree in medieval European history of all things. And
Quick, stop there. Hold on. Medieval European history, right?
Yep. How in engineering, and I realized how much math that was. And then I looked at the course catalog and found the one that had the least amount of math. And this so it's,
from medieval European history, learning about how people were, you know, putting stocks and chains and tarred and feathered to being a military man. Strange.
Right. Perfect sense.
Okay, so you went and got the officer scholarship, and then where'd you go?
So I was commissioned as a surface warfare officer, which basically means I'm a ship guy. So, you've got the sub guys, you've got the pilots. I'm a ship guy. I'm kind of trained to do everything on a ship, kind of a jack of all trades, master of none type thing. And so from Kansas, my wife and I at the time, no kids yet, we moved to Virginia. Spent 4 years out there on two different ships. Deployed three times while I was out there. My daughter was born right after the first deployment. And then after that, started my shore duty after those two ships, and went up to Monterey, got a master's degree, and then came down to San Diego, and shore duty ended there not too long ago. My son was born up in Monterey. And I've been back on a ship. You know, shore duty ended about a year and a half ago. I'm back on a ship now and, doing as well as I can.
Now, was it always your intention to make the Navy a career, or did that just kind of happen?
No, not at all. So I was born and raised in North Dakota. And the Navy was an incredibly quick way to get out of North Dakota. And, there's no money for college, nothing like that. So it was just a good way for me to get out and do something. And my intention was just do a few years and then, get out. And, one thing led to another. I'm here 16 years later. After not wanting to go to college at all, I somehow have a master's degree and, sitting here in beautiful, sunny San Diego, California, which is so much nicer than Los Angeles where you're forced to reside, but...
We're very jealous of all San Diego things, absolutely. Well, and I'm sure that master's degree in Middle European history never occurred to you on the plains of North Dakota either.
I got my master's degree in something out in human systems integration, but, there was no such thing as medieval European history where I grew up. There was oil rigs and farms, and that's about it.
Well, in North Dakota, there's no such thing as water either, but you ended up in the Navy, so explain that.
Well, I don't know. My dad was in the Navy for about 3 years. Back in the early 70s. He never talked about it or anything like that, but, you know, I kind of knew early on there wasn't going to be a lot of opportunity to go to school. So it was just something I always kind of wanted to do. I was kind of a recruiter's wet dream because I just kind of walked into his office and said I want to join up. You know, he didn't have to come to my school or find me or anything like that. Yeah, it worked out well.
Didn't have to pull the crack pipe out of your mouth, nothing like that.
Yeah, no, there was no crazy waivers or anything like that. I walked into the office, he got a big smile right there. So.
That's nice. All right, so you've been there for 6 years, and now, and what, you currently are on a ship right now in San Diego, right?
I am, yeah, I'm on a ship down here in San Diego.
So let's talk about the family a little bit, because you wanted to talk about military families, and I really agree with you that we tend to look at people in the service, you know, lay people, you know, non-military members, you know, and we look at them in such heroic images, you know, like you said, the images of the sailor or the soldier coming home and the kids crying and them hugging at the dock. But I think it's really true that we never hear about what goes on at the base, what happens after the big hug at the port, you know, and that is something that people really should hear about. I know you talk a lot about that, so. Overall, what is the experience like to be gone from your family for a year or 6 months or however long it is and dealing with the frayed relationships that happen while you're gone? Because I imagine, you know, there's a real challenge in being gone away from your family for a long time and then coming back and just trying to pick up the pieces, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly difficult. And, you know, I'm fortunate that I have an amazing wife. And so she can take care of everything while I'm gone. And I don't have a lot of worries as far as the safety or the livelihood of my family while I'm gone. And that helps out a lot. But it is hard. And what I do when I'm underway is, you know, I'm fortunate in the fact that I have incredibly busy days. So usually, you know, maybe 18, 20-hour days. So the days start flying by, and I just don't have time to think. And, you know, that's certainly not the most romantic vision you want in your head. I'm sure everybody wants to see the sailor on the ship just pining away for his family and hoping to go home. I honestly kind of do my best not to think about everybody, and then the time goes by faster. And then you come home and things have changed a lot, especially when you have kids. Because my second deployment, when I left, my daughter was 6 months old, or 6 months old, and you know she didn't talk, she didn't walk, didn't do anything. I came home and all of a sudden, she's walking around, she's talking, she's a little human being instead of this baby that just used to lay there. So things change, and it's really hard to integrate yourself back in. Everybody, you know, we dream about this time when we come back home and we meet our family again, and everybody's happy, and it's kind of like a honeymoon period, and everything's perfect. But really, your family's gotten into a rhythm with you gone, and then you trying to interject yourself back to that rhythm is really, really difficult. You start stepping on each other's toes. Things that, you know, your wife is used to reading stories to the kids at night. And now you want to do it, and the kids get super excited about it, so maybe that hurts your wife's feelings. And it's a lot of work to just kind of integrate everything back together. And, you know, just the last 3 months, I haven't been deployed, but I've been underway a lot. I'm usually underway for the week. I'm back in, you know, maybe a day or two on the weekend, and I go back out the next week. And it's hard. I feel like a stranger in my own house. I come home, you know, I rarely do the dishes, and I, you know, I don't necessarily do the laundry. I don't help with yard work because I'm just not home to do it. So then, you know, I come back and maybe I'm home for a week and everything just feels awkward and I'm kind of a stranger in my own house. But, you know, when you really care about your family, you really love your family, it eventually works out. But there is a transition period. It's not as easy as most people think.
And I wonder how you feel about yourself. Because I can tell you recently, I transitioned my children from public school to private school. And the private schools around my area are like, you know, these golden calluses, right? That, you know, unless you're the progeny of a North Korean dictator, you normally don't get into, you know, versus the gulag of the public school. And as I'm walking around these private schools, you know, and I felt like a child abuser. I felt like, my God, this last 6 years, I've been torturing my children in these public schools. I could have, you know, been in this, you know, this Garden of Eden. And I wonder if you feel something similar when you come back from a leave and your daughter goes from 6 months to whatever, a year and a half or at some point there. Do you feel like, that you failed your child, or do you feel like a bad, like, what are the feelings internally for you?
Yeah, you always feel like you're failing your family. Every time you leave. And I've been doing it, you know, my daughter is now 8 years old. My wife and I have been married for 10 years. And so I've been doing this for a while where I've been leaving the family and coming back. And it never gets any easier. And every time you leave, you know, the kids cry. And I cry. And my wife cries. And then everybody's
I'm about to start crying myself.
Well, yeah, but then again, I've met you in person. You cried a lot then, too. So it's but, it's, you always feel like you're failing the family. And, you know, you come home and you haven't read them stories. You haven't taken them to school. You haven't picked them up from school. You haven't seen their swimming lessons. Your son is now able to throw a football and you've never seen it. And I'm always worried that the kids aren't going to know how much I adore them. I'm going to be gone for 6 months at some point and they're going to forget. And, you know, we've done everything. So when I'm home, I do everything in my power, not to just play with my kids and to have fun with my kids and take them out, but to make sure that there is no doubt in anyone's mind that, you know, I absolutely adore them and I love them. I have to leave at times, but I always try to come home and be the best dad I can be, right?
I would think, and this is just me being dopey, you know, I am dopey, but, like, I would think it would get easier as it goes along, though, because your children have a better facility with language, and I'm sure your daughter and your son are telling you that they love you and understand. I mean, does it get easier as they understand more what's going on? Or for you, it's always the same because it's still just your kid.
Well, it gets easier in the sense that you can communicate with your kid. But it gets harder in the sense that they start to understand time. So when you say, I'm going to be gone for 4 months, or I'm going to be gone for 7 months, before, when they were young, they're like, okay, that means, like, you're going to be home next Tuesday or something. But now they understand, like, wow, daddy's going to be gone for a really long time. So it's harder on them, and then it's in turn a lot harder on me. So there's give and takes. And, you know, maybe once my daughter's 12 and she's swearing at me and, you know, doesn't want anything to do with me, maybe at that point it'll get easier, but I doubt it. We'll see how that goes. But,
well, look, if she hasn't started swearing at you until she's 12 years old, I think you've done a great job. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Well, I thought it was 10 during the decade. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always told my wife that once my daughter gets to dating age, I'm going to ask for all the deployments I can get anyway, just for everybody's safety. I don't think there's any reason to be home then. So.
more so for her boyfriends, I'm sure. That'll be the easier.
right.
So what specific things do you, what about your wife? What's it like coming back to your wife? I mean, you know, we've got kids, that's great, but I mean, your wife's sitting there holding down the fort, you know, taking up 2 jobs. If not 50 jobs while you're gone. So what happens with the relationship with her when you come back?
Well, you know, my wife and I, we've had a very special relationship. We've been, been married for 10, we've been together for 12, and we've been through a lot over that time, and she's done this crazy journey with me. So she understands. She's a veteran at this. But it's always a little awkward coming home because I come home. I've been busting my butt 20 hours a day, 7 days a week for however long, anywhere from a couple weeks to 6 months. I come home, I want to lay on the couch, I want to catch up on the TV, want to hug the kids, play a couple video games, and then sleep in every morning. Well, on the other hand, she's been home, she's been doing all this work, she's been doing the dishes, taking the kids to school, picking them up, doing a lot of all the work, taking care of everything, paying the bills, doing the taxes. So she can't wait for me to get home so that she can sit down on the couch and catch up on TV and sleep in and do all. Right, so we come home and we both want to not do anything, and then that doesn't work so well. So we've kind of got a routine now where, you know, I come home and she gives me a little bit of time to just kind of de-stress, and then I take over for a while and try to give her a break, you know, send her out in town to get a massage or whatever. And then, you know, we try to get back into the regular two-parent household as quickly as possible. But, yeah, it's tough on her, and she'll be the first to admit it. And she has the extra stress of, you know, at the end of the night, you know, she lays down in her bed, and she has the added stress. She doesn't know exactly where I'm at. You know, she knows I'm safe because I email her as often as I can. But she doesn't know exactly where I'm at, doesn't know exactly where I'm going, and, you know, the lights go off at night, and the mind wanders. So she's got that added stress that I don't necessarily have to deal with as much.
Well, look, if it makes you feel any better, I'm home 24/7, and all I ever want to do is lay on the couch and, you know, watch some TV and play some video games.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's really not that different. Okay, so circling back to the blog then. Now, has the blog been made it easier for these transitions, or easier for you and your wife, or have you revealed feelings or thoughts on your blog that maybe she was able to read and understand you a little bit more? Has it made your relationship better?
Yeah, I think so. There's been a few times where she's read blogs, and you know, they bring tears to her eyes because she didn't necessarily understand that the way I felt, or she didn't know that I knew how she felt type thing. And I had a few people also out there email me and, you know, saying things like, hey, I appreciate this post because I know this is how my husband feels about this, but he's never told me anything like this. So I appreciate seeing the words the way my husband feels about things. So yeah, it's been good and it's been bad. And you know, but mostly
Ooh.
The blog has helped.
And let's talk about the bad. The good is boring. I want to talk about the bad. Let's get into the dirt.
When did you screw up?
And when did you sleep in the doghouse for 3 or 4 weeks? Don't worry, your wife's not listening. Nobody's listening.
Yeah, no, she's
you and me. I guarantee
you're staring at me right now. Let's see. There's just been times where. Oh, let me think.
Pretend she's not in the room. Tell her to leave. Tell her to go, you know, to go get barefoot and pregnant, make an omelet.
Yeah. Well, there's been times where I was, you know, where I was deployed, and I send back pictures. We have a port visit wherever, and I'd send back a picture just of me having a good time in this port visit. Just got through, she wants to see a picture of me. And she'd see this picture of me having a good time, and it would actually upset her because, you know, she's home, and, you know, I think this particular picture I'm thinking of, she was actually pregnant. I'm going to go with our daughter at the time. And so she felt very neglected by the fact that I was out there having a good time. And it got me, you know, never in trouble, like, you know, she was getting ready to leave me. But, you know, there was some emails after that, you know, I knew I messed up pretty bad. So.
Do you think she ejected the 7 Malaysian hookers that were in the picture, or was it just
well,
smile on your face?
See, that was the problem, is all the hookers in the picture. But nothing like that. Just, you know, some sailors out in town having a good time trying to de-stress after a few weeks underway.
I understand. I was just joking, honestly. Although I'm seeing a picture. I'm not really joking that much. There's only 4 hookers, but that's another story.
Right.
Okay, so you've been doing the blog for 3 years. So where did the blog go? Because I had a blog. Well, you know, I mean, that's how we met. I had a blog myself. But I did the blog for a reason.
Excellent.
I did for a reason. I wanted to use the blog. It was really, for me, a writing tool. I was going to do for a year and get enough content to try and write a book, which is what I eventually did. But for you, and I know you have aspirations of being a writer, and hopefully that will come true one day. But what's the progression of a blogger? I mean, at what point do you go, okay, I've written for 3 years, now what am I going to do for the next 3 years? How does it work in your head?
Well, it's kind of to the point right now where I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do with it, because I'm not, now that my shortage is over, I'm not home as often, and I feel it's more than a tad hypocritical to sit there and blog about how awesome of a father I am when I'm ignoring my children to write that blog after I've been gone all day, or all week, or whatever. And I can just feel the hypocrisy dripping off the computer screen if I try to do that. So right now it's gone pretty silent for the last few weeks. But, you know, maybe as I get time here, I'll write some more. You know, I enjoy doing it. I love writing, and it gives me a topic to write about. I've got a couple other writing projects I'm doing kind of behind closed doors that are a lot of fun. But, I remember your blog. I enjoyed your blog a lot. So it's kind of the same reason. It's very truthful, very, well, maybe a bit exaggerative on occasion.
It's
but
just
a
touch. Maybe like 1%.
Yeah,
they've all seen my blog. Well, no, nobody's read my blog. You might be the only guy out there who actually did. You're like,
well, no, yeah, well, that's what attracted me. I started writing for a site called Dad Revolution, and I remember you had done a guest post for that, and I read it a lot. I think it was one about the binkies that eventually made it into your book here. And it was excellent, funny, and hilarious, and I enjoyed it. So I actually went to your site, and I saw most of your posts were complaining about how nobody read your posts. And I was like, oh, I have that problem too, so I'm going to email this guy. And that's how we ended up talking. And, you know, I just did one of those crazy promises I never actually expected you to take advantage of. It was like, hey, if you're down in San Diego, we'll hang out. And then you actually took me up on it, which was weird. And, you know,
yeah, that'll teach you. You should know
yeah,
better.
Exactly. No, I've learned my lesson now. So.
Exactly. Yeah, no, you were my only blogger friend. Well, you're my only friend, probably, period. But that's, again, another story we can talk about later.
Right.
But, so, for me, I never wanted the blog to evolve. I just wanted the blog, you know, it was like, again, it was like a writing assignment for me. So does your blog evolve in your mind? Do you see it down the line being something that's, I don't know, military dad blog, the teenage years or something like that?
Well, I don't know. I guess we'll have to see, right? I mean, when I first started writing it, my son was only two, and he just turned five. So, there's a lot of different stuff to write about. And, you know, I don't have time to write the long post anymore, so I'll try to do some pictures. And I think the most successful thing I did on the blog is Thanksgiving, but the Thanksgiving before, I had to go to school on the other side of the country. I was gone for 7 months. So what we did was each of the kids and my wife got me a stuffed animal. And I drove across the country taking pictures with these stuffed animals. I'd sit down at a restaurant in Amarillo, Texas, and ask this, you know, waitress with this amazing twang to take a picture of me and these stuffed animals. And it created some awkward moments, but I always posted the pictures on the blog, and the kids loved it. And that's when I figured out, it's like, you know, you pour your heart and soul into these 800-word posts, and you try to write it and everything, and it's awesome. You think it's going to be the greatest thing ever, and then nobody reads it. But as soon as you throw up a picture of a stuffed animal, it goes viral, and everybody loves it. So I really learned what the public wanted there. So, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun with it, and the kids love the stuffed animals.
Now, the waitress we're talking about, did she have an amazing twang, or did she have two amazing twangs? Which one was it?
I still remember that. It was a nice barbecue, but it was an awkward moment at a restaurant.
Do you talk to other bloggers? Are you in the blogosphere? Do you go to events? Are you active?
No.
Or you just,
No, not as much. I was for a while when I had the time, but now it's kind of, you know, I've had to segregate my time and, you know, between blogging and my family, the family's going to win every time. So if I've got some extra time and some extra energy at the end of the day, I'll sit down and write something. But most of the time goes to the family now and then work, obviously, when I'm not.
Yeah, and most bloggers are sad and pathetic anyway, right? So there's really no reason talking.
Well, that'd give me somebody to hang out with. But, yeah, it's,
Okay, so before we go, I want to talk about something else which is much more important than, you know, both of our stupid blogs, which is weaponry and the ability to kill a lot of people. Because,
right.
You know, you kind of drifted by, oh, yeah, I'm on a ship. But you're, and I know we can't get too deep without, you know, the NSA tapping into this podcast or anything, but you were pretty much in charge of all of the weaponry on the ship, right?
Yeah, I'm on my current ship, I'm the combat systems officer, so I've got a big role in all that. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. And every ship has a little bit different. You know, if you've got the destroyers and the cruisers, they've got, they got some missiles, some guns that can really reach out and touch somebody. And then you go down to the amphibs that don't have a lot of offensive capabilities, but they're able to get in close to shore, drop off the Marines so they can go do their thing. You know, keep in mind that we are the global force for good, and you know, that's what I love doing about the Navy is I actually like the part where I actually get to go help people. The weapons are cool, they're kind of sexy, and they're a lot of fun, but, you know, the times where I actually get to pull in, you know, we've done typhoon relief in countries and stuff like that. That's the part of the job I really enjoy, getting there actually.
Well, screw the people and the PR campaign. Let's hear about the sexy machine for a second. Come on, let's hear about some of the weapons. What type of weapons are we talking about? What's the range? What's the kill zone? Well, give me some dirt here. We want to know about that.
All right, so
to the extent that you can tell me without having me killed by multiple FBI, please.
Yeah, well, I can't get into it too much, but, you know, my current ship, we're kind of in the in-between ship. We're not a destroyer or a cruiser, but we're not an after either. So we can reach out and touch somebody. So, you know, we've got a 57-millimeter gun. It can reach out, we'll call it a few miles, do some damage, mostly designed for, you know, smaller boats and stuff. But it does some damage, and that's the way most of our guns are in the Navy anymore. We don't necessarily expect a huge sweep versus sweep battle. So we're designed for other things. But yeah, I don't really want to get into it too much. So I don't have to.
Okay, no problem. But you're not an active. I mean, the Navy's never in active combat these days, are they? Or yes, no? Are you ever in danger out there, or not really?
I have never been. Now that doesn't say that no naval ship, you know, in the last few years has been in any sort of dire straits. But I have never been in any sort of danger where I've been.
Got it. And do you plan on, how much longer are you going to be in the Navy? I mean, is this another 20 years, you know, 4 years?
I guess it depends on the opportunities that come out. You know, as a surface warfare officer, my next step is the commanding officer of the ship. We'll see how that pans out. That's a very selective community to get into. But there's other opportunities, too, where I can transfer over to another field and maybe try something like that. It depends. So I will say it's getting hard. You know, the military is really kind of a young man's game, and you know, even though I'm still like 30 or 40 years younger than you, I'm getting up to the older half of the Navy. So it's getting hard leaving the family and, going out there and, you know, 20-hour days hurt a lot more than they did when I was 21. So,
yeah. And by the way, it is true that you're 30 or 40 years younger than me, but you've also had two less books published than me. So it's kind of even.
That is a good point. That is a good point.
The last question I wanted to ask you, I meant to ask earlier, but does the Navy monitor what you write? Do they have an effect? Is there a chilling effect of you being on a ship and being a writer, or do you feel pretty much free to say whatever you want?
Well, I don't talk about politics or anything like that. And I'm sure that it has been monitored. I'm sure people have read it. But at the same time, you know, there's a disclaimer right on the site. And I think it's an important disclaimer. It's probably a good thing to bring up here as well. It's always my opinion, right? When you're in uniform, everybody kind of thinks that, you know, your opinions represent everybody wears their uniform. But that's not the case. Everything I write is my opinion alone. Everything I've said here is my opinion. They don't represent the Navy. But I don't speak about politics. I don't get too overly negative. Like I said, I've enjoyed my entire career. I've went from being kind of a poor farm kid to, you know, having a master's degree, a nice house, beautiful family. So the Navy's been pretty good to me for the most part. And I don't get too negative about it. You know, I talk about the hard parts, but, the Navy itself is, you know, for the most part, has been really good to me, and it's been a good career so far.
Cool. Well, Matt, clock of the wall, because we're about done. I want to thank you for your time. I want to thank you for your service to our country. I admire you. I honor you and all that you've done. And, you know, for those of us right-thinking Americans, we recognize that our freedom and everything we have is being secured by people like you. So thank you so much for what you do every day. And tell everybody where they can reach you if they want to get in touch.
Yeah, the site, militarydadblog.com. Feel free to go there. My contact information is all over the place. You can also email me, militarydadblog@yahoo.com, and I'll eventually get to it once I get home from work. But, I'm pretty good about answering emails and getting back to folks.
Okay, awesome. And my name is, everybody knows, Dan and Dante. You can find me at danandante.com. You can also find my second book, which you get is two more books than Max has published, The Complete Asshole Dad, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and everywhere the science books are sold. And that is our show.